RSN 927 Summer Breakfast.
Steve-o, good morning.
Morning, Maisie. Yeah, fantastic to be back on deck. First week back at work and plenty happening.
First week back at work?
Yeah,
you had to spend it at the Gold Coast.
Yeah, it was kind of work. I said to the boss, I didn't really want to come back to the office Monday and put the suit on, so I just floated to the boss on Saturday. Maybe we should go to the Gold Coast, Collingwood camp, ticks a few boxes, maybe do an interview with Brisbane, and he said yes. So 3 days at Broadbeach just to kick off the year.
Would you describe yourself as a board short man or a suit man?
Half and half while I'm there. So board shorts for the entire time until I had to do a live cross, which was in floral board shorts, light blue thongs, and the top was very conservative. The people of Broadbeach quite enjoyed it, actually. That was, what do they say, business upstairs and party down below.
That's right. That's an interesting image that I get in my mind there.
Yeah, but it's a common thing. Some of the newsreaders at Seven, I saw one yesterday. With
shorts underneath the desk.
Underneath the desk and doing a cross in the newsroom in shorts. So happens quite often. You've got to be comfortable, Maisie.
Bit sweaty up there too.
It was very hot. And but Collingwood, they look pretty good. We can probably talk a little bit more about that later. But just about everybody on the track and a real air of confidence at the Magpies. They're still up there, actually. They come back today.
We'll talk about that a little later on. Now, you've covered so many sports for so many years. When it comes to summer, what's your number one? What's your must tune into or watch or listen?
Number one would be Test cricket. That's the one sport that I'm not a person that can sit around all day on the sofa watching sport, unlike probably some here at the station. Maybe Whitey, who's on holidays at the moment, probably watching something. But
no doubt.
I sort of get itchy feet during the day for most things, but Test cricket's something that just draws me in and I just tend to follow.
All right.
I don't miss too many balls of the Test cricket. I think that's way ahead for me as far as summer sport. Big Bash, definitely have a look at. And tennis really captures the imagination. I just like the fact that there's so much going on out and about on the courts, and I think Seven changed this and Nine now, just getting so much more variety. Remember the time when it was just the camera fixed on the one court?
Yes.
Centre court with Alan Stone and somebody else, and that was all you got.
I know. Times have changed. So with Test cricket, have you been as engaged this summer as previous summers?
Yeah, I have, because it's a contest, and at times I find it more enjoyable when the Aussies are struggling. I don't think really take great pleasure in us beating up on Sri Lanka or somebody in years gone by. It's just been a riveting contest and stories going on as well. Players playing for their careers, like a Hanscom trying to keep his spot, the battles of Finch, et cetera. So, and even the battles of our bowling attack when you look at Stark and Hazelwood, who I reckon are pretty lucky to get through to the next series. To be honest, I thought they might have rested one of those boys. Andrew, they haven't been in great form. And it all started, I was at day one of the series over in Adelaide, and I just think they've just let it slip a little.
Yeah, to rest them from the one-day internationals and bring them back for the test matches doesn't really instill you with confidence ahead with the World Cup this year either. So all of a sudden we're going to bring back three bowlers for the World Cup who have only played a lead-up of five or six, whereas these other guys have had great experience against India. Surely that's an experience you don't want to miss out on.
Oh, for sure. And the other, I think one-day cricket's revived.
I agree.
Maybe
suddenly
it's the outfit.
There's interest.
And maybe it's the quality of the opposition, the fact that you can watch Kohli bat a little bit longer. There's a few more nuances to the game. But like, it's back in town. I think it's the outfit started it all. We got a little bit of the passion back, the retro.
Yeah, I liked it.
So maybe we bring back that McDonald's poster. You'd be too young for that.
No, I don't know about the McDonald's poster.
I think it was in about 77. I was a very young person at that stage. But you had to go and talk about the Mac sauce and what was on a Big Mac, and you got a free poster.
Oh, that's
huge.
Right.
Ronald McDonald in the middle.
Yeah.
But that, I think the one-day cricket's back. Maybe we've had too much 2020.
Yeah, I agree.
And the one day has really spiced things up. But, and I've got to say the Big Bash, a magnificent product, though, all the same.
It's been a bit long this year. Very long tournament. Not great last night. A few lights out at the Gabba. No results.
No results.
Ridiculous. In this day and age, we had a power outage at the Gabba, and they bowled a couple of overs in the second innings, and that was it.
Well, they're going to try to go on with some spin bowling. That was an issue there for a while. And the umpires decided that maybe that would be okay for the batsman and maybe the bowler, but the fielders And the people in the crowd.
People in the crowd, please give me a spell.
What were they worried about there?
Well, OH&S.
Like the ball might fly through the air.
Yeah. You are going to a cricket game.
But they're that far away, they're not going to get hit. You're more likely to get hit by a flying bottle of water or something in the crowd. Someone doing a Mexican wave. But always a bit of drama, isn't there?
Yeah, that was very
strange.
Was that
one of the most famous lights off, wasn't it?
Well, Waverley.
Yeah, that's obviously number one.
Yeah,
it has to. But it hasn't happened too often where a game's been called off. They normally
it's happened a bit in India because they kept asking the guys on the coverage last night, oh, has this ever happened to you before? They're like, yeah, no, it's happened in India.
But the power grid over there is not quite at our level, I wouldn't have thought.
No, not
and we're sponsored by a power company.
Well, yeah.
The cricket team.
That's a setback.
But have they found a reason why? Was there an incident?
No, we still don't really know why. I'll try and do a bit of research on that this morning. But there was some suggestion that it obviously wasn't just the Gabba that had gone out. It was the entire street or suburb behind the ground. So that was the problem. So the scoreboard went out. One of the light towers went out, and that was enough for the umpires to say unsafe.
Yeah, I feel for the broadcaster in that. I mean, you don't really have too many contingencies for that, do you? You have a few things up your sleeve in case there's a washout or whatever.
Yep.
I turned over and they're doing a quiz. It's actually quite entertaining. Flem won it. Was it stumped or something? That might actually have a future, Maisie.
Mate, that's been going on all summer.
Yeah, I know, but it might have a future.
Do you reckon you could get on that panel? Do you rate yourself? Are you a quiz night man? Like
more a pop 80s quiz.
You're doing
music.
80s quiz.
Yeah, music. So
that's actually one of Flem's strong points as well.
Yep, he's very. But normally, Flem, wouldn't you think that he'd let other people win? He's so competitive in the middle there. You just sit back for once and just let someone else have some joy, like Dirk Nannis last night, just sitting there with nothing to do on the end.
Well, on that quiz show, he ended up about 80, and the other two were on 20.
I was flicking between that and the tennis. It's quite grippy.
No, he's a very competitive man, Flem. Very keen to win that stump comp. So, yes, he. Unfortunately, was brought into the coverage more than we thought he would be last night because the power outage. So, unfortunately, no result in the Big Bash last night. Now, does that mean that Shane Watson's 100 stands or not?
I think it would have to stand, wouldn't
it? It's a no result.
Yeah, just experience even from suburban cricket. If you get the stats and the game doesn't quite get finished, they still go in.
It's
what you call my cricket, which... all the local cricketers obviously look at. So I think it would stand. You'd be pretty disappointed if it got taken away.
How much research do you do every week on the opposition team?
Very little. Very little, yeah. So we're pretty strong in the suburban cricket, so we don't worry too much. We just go about our own processes, Maisie, and look after ourselves. But our vice-captain actually rang last night, and he'd been through their recent matches and came up with a few plans
because
we've lost a few players and we might need to manufacture something.
Okay.
Out at North Baldwin on Saturday.
How has your form been this season with the bat?
I think average 20-odd, Maisie, so that's about my go.
That's about you, all right?
Yeah, so one duck thrown in.
Apparently your bowling's been good, though.
I got a 6
Revelation.
For 14. Can you believe that?
14?
So it's actually, I'm actually leading the wickets in the team.
Oh, in the team.
14.
Jeez.
For the year. So just sort of trundlers and a little bit of flight, and people tend to get themselves out. So it's become when I got the 5, my son was actually fielding. The ball went in the air and he was cursing. He didn't want to take the catch. So nobody wanted me to get 5 wickets because they knew the amount of fuss that would happen. I did hold the ball up on the way off.
Did you ask for a television interview afterwards? Maybe get the 7 cameras down.
I was hoping someone would pick it up because the ECA do the Twitter feed after each round, and I was the second. It was 6 for 14 with the second best figures for the entire ECA competition in all grades. So, yeah, it's been pretty exciting, actually.
It's a shame Scotty Gullen's score doesn't operate in the summer months as much as the winter months, because you definitely would have been in there.
So it's not a fashionable bowling style, but it's accurate. So.
What do you bowl? Off-spin?
Off-spin. Yeah, you could call it that. Unorthodox.
Are you learning from Nathan Lyon?
No, there's a little bit more flight than Lyon.
Okay.
Lyon's bowling darts, and that's why
slower.
He's been dropped. from the one day side.
Yeah,
so,
his resurgence was good in one day cricket, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Two games.
So supposedly a batsman, but I've had to reinvent myself because we've got such a strong batting lineup. At times, as captain, it's double edged sword. At times, if the bowling attack's very good, you slip yourself down a little bit. But there's times when you want to have a bat and you've got to give others a go, and you end up sitting there. And I've only had 4 hits for the season.
As captain, where are you batting yourself in the order at the moment? Now that you're a frontline spinner.
Four this week. Four is the best spot to be.
Yeah, okay.
Because if you bat at three, you can kind of be opening if there's a wicket. Four, you get a chance to a little sit, have a look at the opening bowlers. Invariably, you get through the opening bowlers. The two openers get that done, and then you just come on when things are a little bit easier. Don't you agree?
Yeah. I was more a five or six batsman.
Yeah, but in a 40-over game, you don't get a chance.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not a guy who can come in and sort of swashbuckle.
No, I definitely wasn't.
And I like the red ink, so I don't like throwing my wicket away.
Yeah, no, fair call. A lot of asterisks next to your scores, just to get that average up. Now, a bit of news in the footy world. Gary Ablett has become a father.
Yeah, great news, isn't it?
Another one to look forward to in about 18 years' time.
You'd think he'd be a chance to be a good player, wouldn't you?
You'd hope so. What if he went to the Gold Coast under father-son?
He played 100 games there easily, didn't he?
Yeah,
so what chance do you think that he'd nominate the Gold Coast?
Zero?
Well, they may be a powerhouse by that stage.
Please. Come on.
They may be, but yeah, Geelong have had an amazing...
Did you see many Suns tops around?
I did. At Broadbeach, I saw a guy in a full Suns kit down there. I couldn't believe it. Yeah, full Suns kit. It was like the training singlet, whatever, a supporter.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
How old?
He would have been mid-30s.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So I did see a Sun supporter.
Well, there was one, at least.
One, yeah. But interesting place, the Gold Coast. It's sort of very relaxed and a lot of interesting characters up there.
Do you reckon that's half the problem, is that they don't invest in things emotionally?
Well, I think they invest in the beach life. If they're up early.
They're up very early.
They're very fit. It's 5:30, 6 a.m. in the morning. They're up and about. Everyone's walking, running, kayaking, paddleboarding. And the beaches were full up there. So I think that's the key, Maze. It's too good the life. So to invest in or boating, fishing, all those things that sort of Whitey normally does.
Well, don't think he's really a boating or fishing man.
But down here in Melbourne with the weather, we're able to maybe have some more downtime and we just invest.
Could you see the attraction as a young player heading up to the Gold Coast? It's a pretty good lifestyle.
Fantastic.
So why don't they want to go?
Well, I think it's success.
Mm.
So if they can turn that around, and Stuart Dew, no doubt, he's doing his best to have a crack at that. But we had a look at the list and thinking, who can we interview while we're up there? And it was probably pretty slim picking. So we went down to the Lions. Maybe up there next week, Maisie, for another little...
Another one?
Yeah, another one.
Oh, come on, Steve.
I'm about to email the boss. We've got the Bulldogs are at Mooloolaba from Wednesday and Richmond from Monday. At the Gold Coast.
Geez, everyone's heading up to the Gold
Coast. And the Gold Coast have invited me in for a coffee with Stewie Jew. So,
you got to go.
I think we have to go just for networking reasons.
Yeah. So, that'll be good. I look forward to your one-on-one with Stewie Jew.
Yeah, we're working well. So we're filling in all the days before the footy. So two trips already in tow. And maybe get down to Tassie for another trip. We love the community camp.
Who's in Tassie? There's someone in Tassie this week, isn't there? North Melbourne, I think.
Brisbane are headed to Tassie.
Oh, Brisbane,
yeah, Chris
right.
Fagan. I bumped into him without name dropping. He said he was... taking the boys down to Tassie, and gee, they love Chris Fagan. Just touring the Brisbane facilities and just the mood around the place. He's just like a father figure.
Isn't it funny how things have changed so quickly up there? I mean, when you think of where they were when they had that huge exodus of young guns, and you look at those players now who've gone on to bigger and better things, and at that point you thought, geez, where are they heading? And the way that they've turned that place around right now is incredible. I think their list is fantastic.
Yeah, apparently the playing area or where they worked, there was a lot of walls there. They've ripped all that out. It's an open plan.
Open plan stop.
Open plan. Everyone can see each other and what they're up to. And
accountability.
Yeah, he has people around for dinner. He's talking how he had Marcus Adams around for
the
dinner.
The specimen.
The specimen. And he refused to eat the dessert that was on the show. Yeah, so, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, so that's, very, very disciplined man, the specimen.
Oh.
I think he's the type of guy who cuts his own fruit and eats certain things.
One of those weigher of food.
But it's a specimen off going on, or like a context.
You and him?
No, not me and him, but it's the big guy, Stephen Martin. There's real debate up there as to actually who is the specimen.
Oh, really?
I'm talking to a few of the people.
I didn't think it would be a challenge.
Including the bearded one, Ben Hudson, who's always a character. He thinks that maybe Stephen Martin's got...
Okay.
The other specimen at the Bulldogs, former Bulldogs player Marcus Adams, covered.
Jeez, that's a big call. All right. Well, we'll watch that through the season. Bit of a... all they'd concentrate on during summer.
Yeah, they're probably the best two specimens in the competition, both at Brisbane.
Yep. That's enough talk about male specimens, to be honest. Not really my expert area of expertise. Craig Gabriel, direct from his bed, which he only got to spend a few minutes in last night. In fact, Garbe Muguruza, I think, has just finished her match. 3:30 it finished this morning, or yeah, somewhere around there.
Something around that.
Morning, Craig.
Is it?
How did this match go so late?
I actually thought there was some sort of a curfew.
So did I.
I mean, I really did. So that match went on at close to 12:30,
yep,
which from what I understand is the latest start to a match ever at the Australian Open. So I don't know. I think there was, at one stage, there was talk about moving it to one of the other courts to get it started before, Zverev's match finished. But that didn't happen, and because that fifth set raced through so quickly with Zverev and Shardy that they just held on and put it on back on that court.
A lot of drama late last night too, not only on the court but off the court as well. Wait, do you want to start or finish with the feud?
Finish.
Right. Let's start on a good note. Bolt of Courage, Alex Bolt, yesterday.
He's a headline Fantastic. Writer's dream, this guy.
Well, Lightning Bolt.
Lightning Bolt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What Bolt about...
from the blue, you can pick whatever you want.
What would you have gone with? Back page of the Herald Sun went with Guts and Bolt.
I wouldn't have gone with that.
No.
Bolt from the blue would have done me, but what a great story. He was playing footy, AFL footy, up at Murray Bridge. But Australian tennis throws these stories up, Craig, don't they?
We're
the journeyman. And then because we've got the advantage of having a Grand Slam with a wild card that we can let these guys in, that sometimes they can take advantage.
Yeah. Well, I remember years ago with Casey Delacroix, or as the Americans say, Delacroix. the story of Casey and going to Target to buy her clothes to play and all that. Yep. So, yes, it does throw up some wonderful stories. These, you know, players that are, well, I hate that term, battlers, but okay, let's just use it in this situation.
Journeymen. Yeah,
I think they'd rather have battlers than journeymen.
I reckon I'd rather be a journeyman.
But it's absolutely wonderful. It really is. It's fantastic to hear these stories, and because people just hear of the big guns and flying privately and the five stars and all that, and to show another side, another face of the sport and what it's really like is fantastic.
2664 467 664. Describe the performance for us over Gilles Simon, the number 29th seed.
It was gutsy. He really dug deep. I mean, and facing match points in there as well to survive all that and keep on going. Oh my goodness! Full marks to the guy.
Do you know what's interesting as well? We spoke, Craig. We've been talking about it a couple of days now. Players taking a break or some time away from tennis.
Yes,
and this is exactly what Alex Bolt did a little while ago. Stepped away from the game, went back to normal life, and obviously learnt a few life lessons, picked up the racket again, and is...
He didn't enjoy the sport. He didn't like what he was doing, and this is very similar to Ash Barty. She got fed up and tired of the sport, and it rekindled the love of the sport and the competitive drive, and that's what's fantastic.
Alexei Popyrin was the other good story from yesterday as well. Now, Steve, you're a tennis man too. Have you seen, and you're a big fan of Dominic Thiem.
I'm a huge fan.
Were you surprised when he pulled the pin?
I've got him down as the next man in waiting to
be really?
The next big thing. I've seen him play such great tennis, but I thought in the first round he looked a bit off. And then again yesterday, do you think he just, is there something underlying with him going into the summer?
I thought I heard that there was some sort of a virus that he was suffering with. But let's not take anything away from Alexei Popyrin.
No.
That was a remarkable and outstanding performance. And I also think that he's seen his friend, Alex Diminor, produce the goods. And they were in the Junior Davis Cup team together, as I was talking about yesterday. Figures, well, why can't I do it? I know he'd practiced with Serena. She spoke to him, gave him some suggestions.
With Serena,
gave him some suggestions and advice and all that. So these you draw on every little thing that you can. Yeah.
How would he have hooked up with Serena for a hit?
I actually don't know how that came about. Yeah, I don't know how that came about.
But he's a good size, isn't he?
He's tall, skinny, you know, great reach.
We're finding some players, Craig, aren't we?
Well, let's hope they all kick on. You know, I mean, I think that Alex Bolt, needs to build on this. There's more chance of Alexei Popyrin moving through because he's only 19. Alex Bolter's 26. I think he can get himself inside the top 100. I think Popyrin has got more opportunity and more time to get himself like top 20. So it's going to be exciting to see. And you know what I picked up on it? Just out of the blue, somebody else might have picked it up as well. The three remaining guys, Alex, Alexei.
Oh, there you go. Mm. Did not know that. Well, the last time three Aussie men made it through to the third round was all the way back in 2004. Here's a quiz question for you, Steve-O. Can you name those three in 2004?
I should know that, but I don't.
So one was Leighton.
I would have been covering it for the Herald Sun, maybe a bit lacking in sleep like Craig.
Leighton, Philippoussis and Reed. They were the three.
Todd Reed.
Yep. Poor Todd Reed. There's a name. Speaking of injuries and a sad life. Yeah. Unbelievable that it's taken this long for considering the depth we've had at certain stages.
We do tend to start the Aussie Open pretty well, don't we? A few upsets
we
go
do,
our
yeah.
way. So it is surprising that it's been that long that we've got three go through.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's been a long time, 2004. And considering we had that sort of golden generation, you'd think that there would have been a few tennis players underneath inspired by that, but they haven't quite come through until now. Now we're building a nice bank, hopefully, to move forward into the future as well.
And I've got to ask you, Craig, how is the tournament now to cover? They've moved the media area, haven't they? That was a couple of years ago. So is it still the same buzz, or are the media sort of tucked away in the back pocket down there, and it's harder to sort of bump into the celebrities and the stars?
It is harder to do that. It's also been split up. So you've got the media facility on two floors, on the fourth floor and on the second floor, so you don't really have as much connection, but it's still a temporary facility. Next year, I think it's next year that we move into the permanent facility.
They never stop working on it, do they?
No.
It will go on year after year. It's just an amazing facility.
It is. It's a remarkable facility.
How does it compare, Craig, with everywhere else in the world?
Well, Andy Murray said this is the best anywhere in the world. He said nothing compares to this. So I have not as yet had an opportunity to get into the player area, into the new player lounge and all that. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
It's just been full on. So, but from all accounts, it's absolutely fabulous.
What would your ratings be, Craig, for the Grand Slams as far as
the majors?
Yeah, the majors. Sorry, yeah, we've argued this on Twitter, actually. Yeah, I've made the mistake. The majors that make up the group.
I learnt my lesson early this summer.
Give us your ranking 1 to 4 as far as just the whole package to turn up, maybe as a spectator / media, and just the grounds and the surrounds.
I think between here and the US Open, there's the most space to move around in. So you look at that. I don't know what the French is going to be like because they're in the throes of a major redevelopment. Everything is very temporary this year for the French Open. So they're building another new court. They're putting a roof on Châtrier, the main court. So things are going to be a state of flux over there. So it's difficult at the moment to compare. Wimbledon, the new roof comes into force this year on court one. So things are changing all over. I think once we see Paris done and Wimbledon, what it's going to be like this year, I think we'll get a better idea. It's difficult at this point to say because there's so many changes happening with these four majors.
Have you been lucky enough, Steve-O, to go to any of the other majors?
I haven't. I've travelled to Wimbledon when it wasn't. I'm not obviously being a footy reporter. It's hard to get away to another major. I've just obviously watched from afar, but I just sort of watched the French Open and think, gee, that would be a special place.
That's your one?
It's chic.
Your one on
chic.
You'd rather go to the French than Wimbledon if you had one to choose from.
Yeah, probably. Because
really?
I enjoy the clay court tennis as well. I just like the grind. I used to like the grass. Wimbledon, fantastic, but it's chic, as Craig said. It's a Lacoste type of environment.
Mm-hmm. It is very much a Lacoste environment.
It is a Craig Gabriel environment then.
And they tend to sort of, they have a long lunch and you could see.
Oh, God, yeah. We don't get the chance for that. We don't have the time for that. But yes, you do. I mean, it's a bit of a people watcher tournament.
Yeah, okay.
You know, you still have all of those people that would turn up very casually dressed, but I think there's an element of style over there with the people, the fans that turn up.
That's why you fit in with your Lacoste wardrobe.
Monsieur, merci.
A couple of the other results from yesterday. Now, I forgot how old Ivo Karlovic was. He's 40 next month.
Yeah. Amazing.
And almost beat Kanishikori.
But when you've got a serve like that, you don't have to do a lot more.
Just another 58 aces yesterday.
As long as the shoulder's working fine, that's all he needs. But amazing story.
Absolutely, yeah. David and Goliath in that one. You know, the height differential. But it is an amazing story. The way he is still there. He's still putting it in. I mean, the first time I ever ran into Ivo Karlovic or got to see him was when he beat Leighton Hewitt in the first round of Wimbledon the year after Hewitt was the defending champion.
Yep.
So, and he's gone on from there. But he's a big guy.
Very good on Twitter, too.
He is hysterical. Hysterical.
Okay. He's shown a bit of life on Twitter.
Excellent.
Very, very funny.
But why is it, Craig, we've got older players, which is fantastic. The career span, is it just the advancement in the technology as far as your recovery and more professional in the way they're going about it?
There is that. I think it's also just this era of player that has tended to blossom a little bit later. There were so many guidelines put in following years ago when all of the younger players were just totally burning out, and especially on the women's side where they put the age eligibility rule in. I think part of that has got something to do with it as well. And I think players are tending to maybe space out their schedules a little bit more as well and be a bit choosy.
Cracking match yesterday during the day between Wawrinka and...
You think so?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah?
It was tight.
Well, I was doing the ball-by-ball commentary of the first set, and I was struggling to stay awake.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I thought that first set was awful. It was, tight.
It was
no
tight.
Doubt.
Yeah,
no
yeah.
doubt. Absolutely. It was a very close match. But I was struggling in that
Got better
first
as
set.
It went on.
Yeah. A little bit, yep.
You need to get some more sleep.
I actually think last year we had a greater number of unbelievable matches, incredible matches, especially on the women's side last year. This year, some good matches, but to me, last year was at another level on the standard and excitement of matches.
Yeah, okay. All right. Craig, we've got to get to the feud. It's continued overnight between Leighton Hewitt and Bernard Tomic in particular. Let's listen to what Leighton had to say after playing doubles last night.
Well, Bernie is what we've come to expect from Bernie. You know, after, pretty much whatever Grand Slam it is, after a first-round loss, he'll come out with something. Spent a lot of time with him one-on-one at a lot of tournaments. Tried to get a coaching structure and physical team around him to give him the best opportunity. At the end of the day, he still kept making the wrong mistakes. For me, it was probably the abuse that I copped from him that, in the end, I drew a line in the sand and, haven't spoken to him since.
Does that continue?
I will. He won't play Davis Cup while I have anything to do with it. I think the threats that I've received for me and my family that I've had for a year and a half now, I don't think anyone would reach out to a person that speaks like that. So.
Directly from Bernie,
yes.
From his team?
No, from Bernie.
And about the threats, are they physical threats or...?
Both.
Both. Yeah.
Blackmail, threats and physical, yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned those threats were for your family as well.
Yeah.
Can you tell us, is that partner or...?
Family. Yeah. Just close-knit family. So, but I still have those.
Leighton, can you explain why these threats from Bernard started and how frequently they were?
Yeah, well, it started it started because of blackmails to do with wildcards. But this was over a year ago.
Some sensational claims from Leighton Hewitt last night. That was incredible listening.
The soap opera goes on, doesn't it, in Australian tennis?
Well, why did he not say this 2 days ago?
Well, he wasn't asked.
He should have been.
He was asked three or four questions, but it was a fairly
well, the one on television was pointless.
Well, correct.
A very, very light interview.
Yeah, but there was a lot of talk around the facility that he was going to be doing a press conference 2 days ago, 3 days ago. That never eventuated. It happened on TV, and as Mark said, it was light. It was almost pointless. But so it's taken 3 days, and we thought something could have happened a lot sooner.
It's an incredible accusation that he's made.
More him than Tennis Australia.
Yeah.
More Hewitt than Tennis Australia.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Mm. I mean, that's a huge accusation to make. Blackmail, threats on family. Yeah.
The word blackmail is very strong.
Very strong. Yeah, and he said, yeah, it was to do with Davis Cup. So, if he's going to throw that out there, I think he should have been more revealing as to what the blackmail specifically was.
That's a story that'll keep going.
It's interesting, obviously, because he's playing doubles, he's obliged to talk, isn't he? So you have to talk.
That's true, if you're requested. But I fell for poor John Patrick Smith, who was just sitting there the whole time.
I know.
The poor guy and his sweet guy. But again, he could have gone in and said, I'm only talking about doubles.
Yep.
So if that's the case, he could have spoken earlier in the week.
Oh, it seemed like
it. I think Leighton should be congratulated. We in the media often think that people don't speak, their mind or open up. So I think it's a bit hard to criticise Leighton for that. I think it was a revealing interview, and I felt sorry for the double. We could have asked him, how's your backhand volley? Did someone ask him a question?
No.
Probably
not one
stone
question.
Face. Oh, poor old JP Smith.
JP Smith.
Let's try and get him on the show next week. We can ask him about his tennis, which is what he's actually there for.
But I think this story will erupt further now.
Yes. It will.
Obviously, being in TV news now, I'm just sort of... What is it, 7 a.m. now? Just thinking in the news directors as they turn up. I think this will explode further. One that won't go away.
Dean, good morning and welcome back.
Yes, morning, Maisie.
Are you at Macca's? What's your staple go-to? Or are you not a Macca's man?
No, I'll join in Macca's. Was it the choice of the nuggets or the apple pie?
Yeah, or you can bring something else to the table if you want.
I'm pretty line and length, probably a Big Mac usually.
All right, fair enough.
I tell you what, the filet of fish.
Yeah, it's a good little side
one. It's underrated. It's a great survivor.
Really?
I think it's just been on the edge of the menu for years, but it just keeps going.
It does. I don't know how. Why would you go to Macca's and order fish? Surely you've got a local fish and chip shop you could go to, Steve-O.
No. The filet, it's a late night, it's all a tartare. There's so much tartare on it and that soft, warm bun that it's a great late night snack. And have they still got the cookies?
I don't know.
They do.
Do the little Ronald McDonald cookies?
They definitely have the cookies. They're pretty cheap too.
Morning, Quinny.
Hello, Maisie.
Did you get Macca's on your way in this morning?
I felt sorry. If I had time, I would have bought you a breakfast from Macca's after describing it as a deprived childhood for those that grew up in the 70s. Yeah. And Steve-O looks pretty offended by that.
Well,
he said you had a deprived childhood.
Macca's growing up.
He can't believe that there was a Macca's pre-breakfast.
No. Couldn't believe that.
And nuggets. There was life pre-nuggets, you know that. They were invented invented in about 1983, I would have thought.
Okay.
When did the 30-cent cone come in?
That was a lot later. I think it was about 2000.
Ooh, no. It was definitely in the 90s. It was definitely around.
I remember in Shepparton, and it was big up there. KFC invented the chicken fillet burger. My God, how good was that? Was it about 83?
For such a lean, fit bloke, you know a hell of a lot about fast food.
Mate, we grew up in the Goulburn Valley. It's a fast food capital. Everyone up in Shepparton there, you know that. It's also the fruit capital, but it was a KFC. The fruit bowl of Australia. Plus the junk food capital of the world.
Right, yeah. Let's straighten up. Let's get on the racing tomorrow at Flemington. Big card coming up. Looking forward to this as we head towards autumn.
Yeah, it's obviously big racing at the moment. And Dino, we've got great racing tomorrow at Flemington, and you'd be coming off a good, 12 or 15 hours sleep going into the show today, wouldn't you?
About 2.5.
What happened?
I want to thank Ray at the tennis because for those that know me quite well, I use a mobility scooter and just coming out of Rod Laver Arena out of the lift and I blew a tyre. So I literally got to see them clean every part of Melbourne Park. Whilst they took my scooter and found a compressor and fixed the tyre. I don't know how they did, but so I got to see, had a chat with Boris. He was there waiting to do some TV.
Boris Becker!
Yes. So, high five with Boris.
He just stepped out of a cupboard.
He did. It was quite remarkable.
Unbelievable. But
was there any collateral damage?
No, it's all right.
Did you get recognised? Please say you did.
Well, only by a couple of...
Boris.
Well, Boris and I were close. McEnroe wasn't that keen to say good day, but no, I saw a few of the cameramen leaving, a few of the cleaners I knew from Caulfield, they were there. Yeah, so it was... it's an interesting place at about 145 Melbourne Park.
How's the food pedimes going down there? Obviously, you get your $25, which Adam White... He tended to turn up the tennis just for that, to get his $25 lunch. Is that still happening?
No, I didn't get into the press part, Steve-o, so...
It is still happening. 20 bucks you get nowadays, which doesn't buy you a lot in 2019, unfortunately.
You go to Nobu or Rockpool.
No. Was Boris wearing his gold suit that we've seen him don a couple of times at Wimbledon?
No, he was in white denim. It was quite a look.
What, double denim?
Yeah.
Top and bottom?
Wow.
With his white hair, it's quite a look. It's a scene.
Dean, I just would have paid so much money for a photo of you two.
Were they skinny jeans with the stretch?
Skinny.
Right. Still living like he's 21, Boris.
Yeah, don't worry. Yeah, he was.
Was he pumped for the Flemington card tomorrow?
Yeah, he said he wants to get the quaddie while he's in town.
Magnificent. Let's start with race number 6. The Australian Cup's Noms Close. That is the name of the race. 1,400 metres, and that is the start of the quaddie. What are we looking at here, Dean? Obviously, Mount Kilcoy resumes and was pretty good last preparation.
Yeah, I think he's a really smart horse. He'll be better over further, but he looks to have trialled up okay, Mount Kilcoy. I'll be certainly including him. Mastering, he got the job done last start. They've taken the blinkers off him here, hoping to maybe just settle a bit more, and I think that's probably a good move. I think he's a good winning chance, and I think he's probably the starting point. But certainly, as I said, I'll be including Mount Kilcoy. And others, I think, worth a little bit of consideration. 6, Ribeye, who does race well fresh. Got Damien Oliver aboard. 7, Kid Ching's got a lot better barrier than it had last start at Caulfield, and I think can improve sharply. They're probably the next two, and Set the Sparkle won here last week, but it's probably up a little bit in grade. But I think Mastering's the one to beat, but certainly the wild card, Mount Kilcoy. So 4, 11, 6 and 7, I think, are probably the main runners.
So you're tipping Mastering, but maybe not as bullish as last start?
Definitely not as bullish. I think he had a good run from that draw. He's got a wider draw here, and with the blinkers going off, they're probably trying to just settle him a little bit. And, from 11, he could just get in an awkward spot. But, he's a progressive enough horse.
What are the markets looking like here, Quinny?
There's been money for numbers 4 and 11. The 4, Mastering, heads the betting at 290. Mount Kilcoy has been a firmer 7 into 6.
Let's head to race 7 now. The Kensington Stakes over 1,000 metres. Champagne Cuddles obviously leading the market here pretty comfortably. Is that the way you're leaning in this one, Dean?
She's the class runner. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Interesting. I don't think she's carried more than about 55 kilos in a race in her career, and all of a sudden she's here against some handy sprinters without going over the top with 59.5 kilos. I think she's a good winning chance. I think I'm a bit with the devil I know in Thermal Current. I know he gets down the straight very well. I know he carries weight well, and I just think he's at good odds. But they're the two main chances. If you're going wider, Glenn Orr's a horse I've always had a lot of time for, and I'd be putting him in. But I'm going fairly narrow in this leg of the quaddie. I think numbers 1, 2 and 5 probably cover it for me.
Is that how we're looking with the markets as well, Quinny?
Well, Thermal Current's a $6.50 chance, and sounds like Dino pretty confident about that. Champagne Cuddles has been the best backed runner at $2.10, Glenn Orr at $3.90, and Champagne Cuddles, she's nominated for the All-Star Mole. Do you think that's maybe why she's having to look up the Flemington Straight first up?
Oh, well, I heard Bjorn Baker yesterday mention that all options are open. I mean, there's races like the Lightning and the Newmarket if she handles the straight well, but if not, if they want to get out over further, of course, the All-Star Mile, and with the voting starting then in the next couple of days, I think all horses will be looked at and wanting to push their case forward, especially your mate.
We'll get to that in a second. What do you think her pet distance will be, though? Because she does look like one of those runners that could potentially improve over more ground, or might be very good sort of over the shorter, sharper trips.
Yeah, I reckon about 1,400's a really good trip for her. Hence, she was well in the betting in a Stradbroke and those sort of races. So, I think She's good enough to win tomorrow. There's no doubt about that. But you would think she wouldn't be wound up if the All-Star Mile and those sort of races, which are 6 and 8 weeks away, are on the cards.
Speaking of that, Tom Melbourne, give us the latest quote.
Well, did troll very impressively the other day with Damien Oliver in the saddle, and I've just got a horrible feeling, Dino, that punters are going to take the mickey and nominate this horse for the All-Star Mile.
Well, you'll be voting for him.
Oh, yes.
I want him nowhere near. He should be barred from Flemington.
I reckon Trent will vote for him just out of spite for you.
My nemesis.
He wants your Friday gig.
He does. He'd jump in my grave very quickly, wouldn't he?
Well, he'll sing, he'll do a lot of things that you haven't done.
He's a man of many talents.
Yeah, song and dance man and odds man.
And very much a hot beverage man, which are missing this morning. Now to race 8, the Batali Handicap, over 1,800 metres, benchmark 84. A little bit more open this race, Dean. Where are you leaning towards here?
Yeah, no, right down the bottom's the key runner. I think Lure Me In is the really good starting point. He should have won, probably could have won his last three. He certainly should have gone very close at Caulfield on Boxing Day and then had a lot to do last time out. The big key here is that he's dropping in weight, he gets a senior rider on, and he gets a good barrier draw. He won't have to go right back to last. I'd imagine he'll settle midfield, and from there it'll make his job a lot easier. I think Five Kingdoms having a fantastic start to his career. He's had 7 starts, 4 wins, 3 placings, so he's doing a great job. I think he's the main danger. And I think Kentucky Breeze can improve. I think back a little bit in trip, Damien Lane aboard can get a great run from the draw. I think they're the three principal chances for me, but very keen on Lure Me In. I think he's one of the better bets of the day.
All righty.
You've seen a lot of morals beaten over the years, Dino. 10 being Vandercross, 1 being a little bit unlucky. Where would you have rated Lure Me In on New Year's Day?
Solid 9.5.
Yeah. Should have absolutely bolted in and has been well back from 270 into 230 to bounce back.
Alrighty, so it's still leading the market there. To finish as well, the Victorian owner Gold Card over 1,200 metres to finish the day. A sprint home at Flemington. Which way are you looking here, Dean?
This is a terrific sprint race. It's in restricted grade, benchmark 84, but I think you can make a case for 5 or 6. I think the main ones will be Order of Command was essentially disappointing last week, but he was up in grade and things didn't work out. Now, whether Barrier 1 down the straight's going to work out for him again, that's the query. I think Atlantic City's the good one at odds that can improve. I think he placed in this race last year. I think he'll be fitter for his first up run. Streets of Avalon 7 was a terrific run at Caulfield. 11 Intuition won well. Ran well for second up in Sydney, and James Cummings is just doing this so well, picking the right races to bring these horses down. Exaltara, number 12, is my top pick. I think had no luck at all at Caulfield and has been going very well in this grade. And Langrose, very much in the betting, comes off a good first up run, number 15, and form around him's very good. So I think you've got to probably include nearly the majority of those, but I've got a slight leaning to Exaltara.
Exaltara has been 6 out to 8.50. Do we take the 8.50 now or maybe keep our powder dry and hope the drift continues?
Yeah, I hope the drift continues. There seems to be good support for others, but he's just a bit of a constant in this grade, and he was totally luckless at Caulfield.
Now the most important time of the morning, Dean. The formula bet before we let you go on this Friday. Who's your contestant today?
It is Simon Nabbs of Craigieburn. And for Simon, we are having $40 the win, race 2, number 2, Lycurgus. $40 the win, race 8, number 13, Lure Me In. And $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 2, number 2, into race 8, number 13. And that was for Simon Nabbs of Craigieburn.
And I'm looking forward to seeing this man play at the Western Bulldogs after a number of years at the Hawks, including a couple of flags. Taylor Dre joins us on the line this morning. Taylor, good morning and welcome to RSN 927.
Good morning, fellas. Thanks for having me.
How's the switch been over to the Western Bulldogs? How have you settled in?
Yeah, it's been really good. I think I've spoken to a couple of people about it before that I knew a fair bit of the group just through Matty Suckling because he's a good mate of mine. And obviously having Bebo as an assistant just made a few things a little bit easier in the transition. So the first 6 or 7 weeks before Christmas was really good, and now a week back into it and the group's going well.
Yeah, how did you find that time off? It's sort of a new ground in a lot of ways. Footy, what, almost 3 weeks off at this time of year. Did you have a program to go through? Was it tough to sort of stay disciplined, I suppose? Because guys like myself would be thinking, well, it's time to have a couple of beers and relax.
There was still time for beers and relaxing, but I guess the extra week we got given, you know, the whole New Year period, you're sort of past that anyway. So you're looking forward to training. You're wanting to train. So the program, I guess, was just a continuation of what we would have done. But fortunately for me, I was up home with a couple of ex-teammates. So when you train with a couple of people, it definitely is easier to get done.
What do you get up to in that time away? Do you have any hobbies that you don't get to do throughout the rest of the year that you finally get the Christmas break and think, oh, I can do that, which I don't get to do too often? What do you do away from the footy field?
Yeah, well, I'm from Corowa, so that's up in the Murray River.
Yep.
And I love going out for a fish. So the challenge is to catch a metre-plus cod. And so every time I go up home, that's what I try to get done. But unfortunately, I've fallen short every time, so... Still the hobby when I get back home is to try catch a big one.
Not a bad golf course up there too. It's 27 holes at Coral.
Yep.
I played it a few times.
Yeah, and it's probably as good a nick as it's ever been. They had the Marcus Fraser sort of open, which is like a sort of Ambrose comp. I think they ran it just after New Year's, and obviously they had the course in ripping nick because of that. So not that I'm a Coral tourism advocate, but if you want to go play
Corowa,
play it now.
Yeah, we used to go on golf trips up there with the Herald Sun, a group of 15
Did
guys.
You?
Yeah, got a bit loose at times in the motel nearby. You know, you do the golf packages where it's about $100 to get two nights and the free golf and even a schnitzel at the pub. But it was a great time. But just to get back onto the footy, Tom Boyd, obviously a lot of talk about him and where he's at.
Yep.
What's he like as far as his training loads at the moment?
I think they've given a bit of a conservative approach with Tommy. Obviously, with the back, it's something you don't want to mess around with. But he's progressing really, really well. I mean, he hasn't got a lot of the footy stuff under his belt, but the amount of Ks he's doing in his legs, he's moving pretty well. He's got his fitness up, so to speak. So I don't know what the plan is over the next couple of months, but even since I've been at the club, he's progressed his loads fairly consistently week to week. So I'd imagine that'll just continue on and then they'll reassess.
Plenty of batsmen will be pretty hungry for runs. Next time, the CA11 are out in the middle because yesterday a few missed opportunities and a few people took theirs, although they're not in the test squad. Brett Stubbs was down there. He's part of the Mercury down in Tasmania, and he joins us on the line this morning. Brett, good morning and welcome to RSN 927.
Good morning, guys. How are we going?
Very well. Now, a few big opportunities missed from a few of our key candidates. Run us through what happened yesterday as the CA11 took on Sri Lanka in Tasmania.
Yeah, there'd be four batsmen in the test squad absolutely kicking themselves from yesterday. So, obviously, it's a three-day trial game against the touring Sri Lankans. It's not actually a first-class game. The Sri Lankans are using all their 16 man squad throughout the game, obviously using the pink ball. They agreed to 75 overs each in the first innings. Australia won the toss and batted. There was a little bit in the wicket early, as you'd expect on the first day. But the four test players, Matt Renshaw, Joe Burns, Manus Lubiszczyk and Will Pekowski, unfortunately they all missed out, and that left Curtis Patterson and Jake Doran to really... It's not a very highly credentialed Sri Lankan bowling attack, you've got to say, and they made the most of it, putting on about 218-run partnership unbeaten.
Yeah, it looked like Joe Burns almost, not a lot of footwork, almost giving catching practice into the slips there. Just sort of
Right. Joe Burns pushed off the back foot, and it was an excellent catch taken at third slip. Lubiszczyk chopped on off the back foot again. Renshaw, a little defensive prod to first slip, and Will Pekowski, he batted quite well too the first break, and then straight after the break, they was a bit of a short ball barrage. It was about three in a row, and the third one, he went for the hook shot and got a top edge and went straight to fine leg. So he made 23. He looked really good till then, but obviously it was interesting also to note that both the Sri Lankans and we spoke to Curtis Patterson afterwards, who batted superbly, both said how soft the ball got and it made batting so much easier. So if they got through that first stage, they would have made hay.
I know Kookaburra have made a few changes to the ball again this summer as well, just to try and minimise the damage over a period of time. So interesting comments there after the day's play. Will Pekowski I'm interested in as well. You said they bounced him a couple of times. Was that a clear tactic from the Sri Lankans? And are you expecting that to continue throughout the summer if he gets a few more opportunities at Test level?
Yeah, we spoke to the Sri Lankan coach afterwards and he said that it wasn't a clear plan, but now it's something they're certainly going to consider going to if he plays in the first test. So it's certainly something they've put in their little book for Kamut the Gabba, when it would probably be a bit faster and a bit bouncier than down here at Bunston Arena. So it's certainly something they've got in the back of their mind. And it's interesting you mentioned the Kookaburra balls, because the Sri Lankan coach was saying that the previous pink test they played in Barbados was the Duke ball. The one that they played, they said, was a noticeable difference between how soft the Kookaburra got compared to the pink Duke ball.
Many people turn up down at Blundstone for the occasion.
It wasn't a huge crowd, it's fair to say. It was probably people wandering in and out during the day. It was a beautiful day down here, but probably a few hundred. It was free entry, but a bit of sting goes out of the game when it's not a first-class match. Players were coming on and off the field quite regularly. They used all their bowlers, the Sri Lankans. So, it was played at a fairly intense level, but not the usual first-class level, it's fair to say.
And great to have you on board on the show. Obviously, you're famous for one thing, and that's that little run-in with Clarko a few years back. We'll never forget that down there. How's the relationship with Clarko now?
Oh, yeah, it's an interesting one. We've never really chatted about it. He rang me up after it to have a chat about it, but kids get raised fairly regularly.
Does it? Well, I don't even know what happened. What happened?
Well, Stubbsy will take you through it. Yeah, it was well known. It was probably, 7 years ago, I would have thought?
It was 2008, so 10 years ago now, and they lost their first game of the season to Steve O's Bulldogs down at, in Launceston, and it was about round 10 or something, and even that first loss in round 10, Clarko was pretty fired up.
About that. Very interested in the game down at the Tennis, which was a great success last year. And Mitch McCarron, one of their best players, joins us on the line now for a bit of a preview of those two and a look back at a good win last week. Mitch, welcome to RSN 927.
Good morning.
How, first of all, the win last week against Cairns, tell us about your mindset going into that final term where you're able to reel off 22 points to 9 and come over the top.
Yeah, I think we knew Cairns would play well. They've found some new life towards the end of the season, and they got a massive win over in Perth, which is pretty rare to do, and they came out and played pretty well in the first half, and we kind of just sat there at halftime and said, look, we haven't made any shots that we usually make, and they'll eventually fall, but it starts on the defensive end, and I think that's where we really locked in and just created some easy opportunities for ourselves.
How much confidence do you take away from the fact that you're able to come back and have a ripping win?
Yeah, a lot. I think it helps us, stay in the belief that, our defense can win us games, especially late in games. Can you get the big stops to win the game? Trying to outshoot teams in this league is a dangerous game because there's so many talented scorers. So it really does start on that defensive end, and that game, it really showed.
Tell you what, as a supporter, there's nothing better to watch than Casper Ware when he's on fire. What about the shimmy afterwards as well? he's got some moves.
He was feeling good.
He sure was.
He'd been out early with foul trouble, so I know he probably built up a little bit of frustration. I know he's a little bit quiet. And once Cairns started egging him on a little bit from their bench and they were talking just a little bit too much, I think Cass said, all right, I've had enough of this.
He turned it on, that's for sure. You come up against Perth, so an away trip before you head back to Melbourne to play at Melbourne Arena on Wednesday next week during the middle of the Australian Open. A great event, that one. But before we talk about that, Perth on Sunday, they've been pretty inconsistent since their unbelievable start to the year. They've basically flipped it around. I think they're about 2-8 from their last 10 games after being, I think, 11-2 at one stage, which is amazing. So in terms of your preparation for this, is it difficult coming up against a team where there's obviously a big gap in between their best and worst?
Look, I think it would be silly to approach the game differently than we did when we went over there the first time. They're a really good team. They've still got really good players, and I don't believe for a second that that club won't turn it around and start playing some really good basketball towards finals time. I think, obviously, they're going through a bit of a lull, but, you know, they're probably thinking, what better time to turn it on with Melbourne coming into town and get a big win for their confidence as well. So, you know, we can't change our mindset to any other game.